Radio.
Pornography and its dangers. A talk by James Parker at the Sydney University Catholic Society's Life Week 2016.
Thank you, Francis. Better take my watch off, otherwise I will talk forever and it'll be 2:30 tomorrow and you'll realise it's still talking. Okay? Thank you for that. I just want to start with a very quick prayer. Heavenly Father, I just ask that your love and your truth and your light and would be here with us today, just that we would be able to receive of your freedom. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Is that my microphone making that sound? Or is it Francis? Francis, are you making that sound? First thing I want to say is, well done for being here. You stepped into a tent where there's a talk on porn. Not an easy talk often to come to. And the first thing I must start by saying is this. Hello, my name is James. I'm a recovering porn addict. Sounds very much like a 12-step group, but I say that because I want you to know this. Do I still struggle with this stuff? Yes, of course I do on occasions. I'm very, very much a work in progress. I'm still learning, you know? I mean, I struggle nothing like I used to, but do I still struggle? I have to be honest and say, yes, of course. Thank you to Francis for just that brief introduction. I feel one of the only things that kind of qualifies me being here today is the fact that I love having the opportunity to share some of the insights that I got from running basically Europe's only Christ-centered program for sex addiction, which I did for several years in the UK. I also set up a number of other groups called TAG, the Accountability Group. Nothing particularly special about that, but it was an opportunity where men in particular could regularly come, but sometimes for women, could regularly come and talk honestly and openly about where their lives were at with all the sexy stuff, which was nearly always founded with porn itself. If you will allow me to begin with, can I just tell you a little bit about my own story? Is that okay? I think that'll set a bit of a context. So I was first exposed to pornography at the age of 8. Now I'm 48. Yeah, the middle age spread is starting to happen. I breathe in as much as I can while I'm in public. Just kidding. I'm talking 40 years ago. When I was first introduced to pornography, it was mostly black and white images, and the images just backed up the stories that were there in the magazines. There was no such thing as penetration or something like an erection or something like that. These were just, in a sense, what today we'd call softcore images. But nevertheless, they were images and they were there. How did I come across this stuff? It's because I lived in what we'd regard as in the UK as a working class area. And what happened is a lot of the lads down the street where I lived, their dads had got these sort of porn mags stashed away and hidden away, always hidden, never out in the open. And sometimes they would take them during the daytime and bring them down to our sort of den that we built. I'm from a big family, big house, big garden. And our place became where all the kids in the street assembled. And so what happened is the different dens that we had around the garden, we had a big treehouse about 15 foot off the ground, so adults never went into it. You had to really climb up high to get into it. And there was the stash of porn. So there I am at the age of 8, being exposed to all this stuff. And basically, the key message around this is, shh, don't tell anybody. It all became about being secretive and about, in some way, there was a sense in which I began to realise like a toxic shame was beginning to sort of to cover me and to cover those around me. But basically I hit a point where I was beginning to have constant access to arousing material. What the material did is it aroused me. Now what you don't know is at the age of 8, you're about to find out, is I also began being sexually abused. And I was sexually abused for 3 years, almost every single week, by a Christian teacher at the school where I went. My family's not Catholic, this is not a Catholic school. But nevertheless, this was a spiritual teacher in many ways. And so what happened is, for 3 years, I was sexually abused by him. Now, alongside that, also shortly after the abuse had begun at school, is some older friends of one of my older brothers also began to sexually abuse me. So I've got a concoction of the pornography that's happening there in and around the home setting. It's all very quiet. I'm also being groomed for a time before I'm initially sexually abused. And that's going on. So literally, I am being thrust at the age of 8 into a world that is totally and utterly erotic. And nobody knows. Nobody. For me, what had happened is, because I'd learned the message, shh, around porn, is I thought, you don't talk about the sexy stuff. Which meant that actually I had been set up quite easily as this teacher was grooming me. He might have realised, I don't know, I was 8 years old for goodness sake, he might have realised there's something sexual about this kid, or his innocence is being diluted in some way or other. All I know is this, is I ended up in the clutches of this man and of his behaviour towards me, which meant that up to, even before the age of hitting puberty, I'd in some way or other been raped nearly 100 times just by the teacher alone. The age of 14, I got a financial allowance from my parents. They decided it was a good thing to give their kids money to teach them responsibility. So they gave us a certain amount of money that we'd have to learn to buy our own t-shirts or casual clothes, or in some cases some of our toiletries. You know, boys are like at 14, they want to spray Lynx over every bit of their body 24 hours a day. That's what, you know, smell good girls, you know, sort of thing. And there I am, 14 years of age, got a financial allowance. Now, I've seen this porn, and it's all kind of stirring around within me. This sexual abuse stopped when I was 11 years of age, and I've been left hungry to try and connect into the world of the sexy stuff, which is kind of being denied from me. And I've got these same 3 or 4, 5, 6 magazines that I'm kicking around sometimes the house or the garden, etc., and I'm hungry for more. So what I began to do is I began to spend my money on getting hardcore porn. Sometimes that meant finding addresses from lads at school to get it shipped in from Sweden. It's the only way you could get the hardcore stuff easily and quietly. And the other side of it was is that I began to try and put on a deep voice, even at 14, and say, you know, and buy porn. So I'd go to the adult bookstores, and there I would buy pornographic material that at that time in the UK, I had to be 21 to buy it. And at 14, 15 and 16, I was managing to get in and to pay my clothing money and buy porn. And I said to my parents, oh, I lost my money. I don't know what happened to it. I kept losing my money. But that's the whole thing about me trying to be secret about the whole side of things. So I had to try and fuel this fantasy world that was there, and it was becoming more and more insatiable. By the age of 16, no doubt, of course, as a result of some of the sexual abuse stuff. Now, I'm a scholar at school. I'm doing really, really well. I'm the bright kid, I'm bouncing off the walls all the time. I'm really quite quiet now, you'll soon come to understand. Imagine me then, wow. Anyway, but the point is this, is that nobody had any idea whatsoever of what was going on in my life, apart from the fact that I was starting to regularly try and also access some alcohol. I felt good with some alcohol in me, I could start to relax a little bit, and I needed a bit more alcohol. So basically, I've got a rising desire and need for alcohol. And I'm constantly trying to fuel this whole area where I've got a porn addiction. I went to a party one night when I was 16 years of age, and I had far too much to drink. And basically one night, well, on that particular night, a man who is now dead, he raped me. And I was left there in this drunken stupor, having been raped by him. Of course, because I'd seen so much sexy stuff at this stage, I didn't think to tell anybody about this. I just thought, we don't talk about this stuff. The same thing happened to me when I was 17 years of age as well. And again, it also happened to me when I was 18 years of age too. And I, as I look back now, I clearly said no in those circumstances. And my no was ignored. And I came to believe sometimes, even when we say no, there's just no point, just give in. So what's happening is slowly but surely, 10 years later, that exposure to pornography at the age of 8 was starting to have some serious ramifications on my life, on my decision making, on the way in which I perceived my own dignity. I actually came out at the age of 17, and my parents were just, they were beautiful. My mates at school were really, really good about it. And at the age of 18, I went to London, and I threw myself headfirst into the gay community. And there I came, there was a lot of porn in the gay community. And so what happened is we just got on with sharing each other's stashes of porn, really, from place to place. And because I was looking at this stuff all the time, what happened is I ended up living a very, very promiscuous life at that time as well, having a couple of hundred lovers, all in all. And as I look back now, I sometimes wonder whether I was actually, on occasions, not every time, but on occasions, whether or not I was actually reenacting some of my childhood sexual abuse. Anyway, at the age, in my early 20s, I ended up saying, I made the decision that I just needed some love and some hope in my life. Ever feel that? Yep. And it was then as an active gay man that I turned around and I made the decision that I really needed to come to know the person of Jesus Christ. And I made that decision. And it becomes very, very difficult to be reading pornography, which I regard as something impure. And really, I do believe it's dangerous personally. Even though the delight is then withdrawn towards it. It's very difficult to look at that while trying to follow Christ, who is, in all essence, the light of the world and all of his purity. I found at that time that I needed just to step aside from a lot of where my life was, and I really needed to make a very clear decision about the direction in which my life was going. And so I made the decision that I was going to go on the walk with Christ, really. And I needed to make a community of other Christian believers. That was going to be my community. And I came to realize in making them my home, these guys weren't all together. They weren't squeaky clean. They were as broken as I was. It's just that sometimes their brokenness, want to put another way of putting it, just manifested itself differently to what it did for me. But what did happen is this, is I found a place I didn't have to keep being secret about lots of things in my life at all. So I hit a point where I destroyed my extensive collection of pornography. Now, that was just magazines. I'd have a bonfire. You couldn't kind of chuck it in the bin. Too much stuff in the bin, people would know. It would pick up a big bonfire. Of course, today, we have literally, people I know have terabytes upon terabytes of downloads of movies from every single website going out there. And I know this, if I take my gaze anyway, or other, in any way, shape, or form from Christ, then what happens, I am deeply and rapidly tempted towards temptation. And I find it's almost like there's a beast knocking at the door of my life saying, you better let me in. Think about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's this whole thing whereby you hit a point, you've got to turn around and say, I'm in despair. I can't do this anymore. I can't do it anymore. This is starting now to slowly steal life from me. What looked like freedom, what looked like exciting, it's my own choice, it's my own right, etc., is suddenly starting to suck life away from me rather than give life to me. I delighted in porn. I delighted in the way it made me feel. It made me feel alive. Sometimes it allowed me to reduce my anxiety and the stress levels of my life. But suddenly, this was starting to kill me. And I really knew that I hit a breaking point. I think one of the point for me was when friends of mine were going away for a week and I'd offered to do little jobs around the house for them, one thing and another. So I had the key to their home and I would turn up at early in the morning, just before 9 o'clock, and I thought, oh, I'll just check my emails. Have you been there? Don't put your hand up, I know you have. I'll just check my emails. And then before you know it, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I spent the whole day going from site to site to site. And yes, masturbating, and just looking for that sort of sense of just more and more and more. I did that for 5 days in a row and realized I'd wasted 40 hours that week. And my friends came back and said, look, we know you've been in the house. What have you done? I'm like, all sorts of stuff came up, really. And so I didn't get the chance to do the stuff you wanted me to do, but I realized I'd hit a place of crisis. Sometimes we have to hit that place of crisis around this topic. And I began to realize that I needed to walk a journey of profound, profound honesty. Now that's really hard in a culture that everywhere you go is throwing some form of image or other at you, all the time trying to lure you into comparing your body with somebody else's. And ladies, I often do this, and I want to say it again today, until you guys really hear this loudly and clearly, I am really sorry about what pornography has done to you and your image of yourselves as women. It has told you that somewhere down the line, your body has to be a certain shape, a certain size, that you're to act in a certain way. And I mean that, I'm really sorry. And I hope there are many other men that will turn around and say, I'm sorry, you are free to be yourself just as you are in the midst of the dignity and the beauty that God has given you. But the same is now becoming true for us as men. There's this pressure on us. Because of pornography, there's a sense in which, how will I love? How will I form? The sexual act and everything about sexuality is not about a performance. It's actually about the constant revealing of our own dignity and the dignity of one another. So what's really happening in porn, as if we don't already know? Basically, we've been given an illusion of intimacy. An illusion of what it is to be without fear. Intimacy means untimid. To be untimid means without fear. We're given an illusion of that. Actually, we're drawn more deeply into a place often of greater fear. And what's happening is that animal drive within us to try and find physical gratification is just stirred up and stirred up and stirred up more and more and more, to the point that we crave ever newer or more erotic stimuli. And that leads us into a place of addiction. So the freedom for mature adults to make choices, which is what was proclaimed when people were looking at legislation on pornography, that freedom for mature adults to make choices suddenly means it's becoming a rapid lack of freedom. And the maturity of adults is actually drawing them back to a place of childlike dependency on a drug that cannot satiate. We've all got these life-sustaining drives within us. You know, when you're hungry, what do you want to do? You want to eat. When you're thirsty, you want to drink. Francis, if there's a drink of water somewhere, I'd love one. I need you to find a drop of water, I'd love it, mate. Cheers. To wash, to respect each other. We've all got these different drives. And of course, we've got a sex drive. Without that sex drive, then what happens is the human race fails to be continued, unless we suppress it in all sorts of different ways. But ultimately, you need an egg, you need sperm, and I've learnt from my wife who deals with fertility, you also need cervical mucus, but that's a talk for another time. Let's not go there. Sorry about that, but that's very true. But my point is this, is if we derail some of those instinct-driven behaviours, and the sexual drive is derailed through pornography, then we end up being led, if we're not careful, towards pathological behaviours. And those pathological behaviours themselves then become addictions. And basically, addiction is a loss of freedom. We see that in people who gamble or who do drugs or, you know, are stuck with all the sexy stuff, etc. And within eating disorders, it becomes an addiction there. So we end up stepping into a vicious circle, sort of, in a sense, falsely searching for gratification and throwing ourselves into greater need and dependency. And it begins not only to destroy us, but it begins to destroy others. Psychologist and psychiatrist, a German psychologist and psychiatrist called Dr. Victor Klein, who's had well over 300 clients dealing with sexual abuse and different sexuality stuff. Thanks, Francis. He said that porn conception basically has a casual relationship not only to obsession, but can also lead towards crime as well. And he says there's four stages to it. He said basically we start with addiction. We get hooked, and that it's like a powerful stimulant that needs a release. So therefore, we're drawn towards orgasm or towards masturbation. This can create dependency despite some of its negative consequences. And some of those consequences I've seen in the work I've done with sex addicts are divorce, job loss, and yes, in some cases, problems with the law, which means criminal behaviour. From the addiction side, it can move towards escalation. People need something that's a bit rougher. They need something that's more explicit. And therefore, what's regarded as more deviant sexual material is required for people to become high or to get turned on. So the stimulant has to be increased just to give what was previously the same initial effect. It's not giving a higher effect, it's giving the same effect, but the stimulant is having to be risen, having to rise. So they've got addiction, escalation, desensitization. What previously was shocking, or was previously seen as illegal material, is now accepted as needed to create arousal. And our sense becomes from the images that we see is, well, these people are all doing it, so everybody's doing it. And if we're feeding our minds with that on a semi or even a regular basis, we begin to think everybody's doing this, which gives us silent permission, in a sense, to turn around and change what has previously been our personal standards. Addiction moves to escalation, moves to desensitization. And then before you know it, if you haven't already begun doing this, we end up acting out sexually. Because we have a tendency to create what we've just viewed. Then we end up locked into a place that we find is very, very difficult to step away from, to change it, or to reverse it. So clinical addiction can really quickly set in with porn. But that temporary feel-good factor does lead to us actually damaging ourselves. So addicts do often what they don't want to do, and they don't do what they do want to do, which is be able to say, I want to leave this now for a couple of weeks and walk away, or even leave it away for good. And often, very often, we're very, very blind to the damage, not just done to ourselves, but this does on our relationship with others. So why are we drawn towards this stuff? What's the lure of all of this? Well, basically, and often, and I've noticed, particularly, say, in the lives of working with several hundred people dealing with sex addiction, where porn's an often underlying factor, nearly always the underlying factor, is we want to escape unpleasant feelings. We don't like feeling lonely. We don't like feeling anxiety. We don't like being affected by inferiority or by stress, etc. So what happens is we look for a temporary relief. What we don't realize is that the original and real problem still remains afterwards. So we go looking for pleasure initially, and we may find that pleasure. But eventually, if it's not giving us pleasure, we look to porn sometimes just to dull the pain, because that starts to begin to rise. And of course, as it rises, the dose has got to be increased, behavior takes over, and it starts to destroy our life supports around us as well. And often what happens is this, and this is where most people are today. And I mean most people, not just most people who are struggling with porn, but most people are there, because most people today are struggling with porn. And we know this isn't just a male problem anymore. One of the key areas that the porn barons are now targeting is women, very, very deliberately targeting women as well. And what happens is we see that people don't have the strength anymore to actually withdraw from their addiction. So they feel in a place of total and utter hopelessness in the midst of all of this when trying to escape. And the issue is this, is that porn is basically, it's like a substance-independent addiction. Like gambling, like workaholism, like anorexia, etc. It produces a biochemical process within our brain. I'm not going to go into detail about this too much today. There's a great book called Wired for Intimacy by an American fellow called Dr. William Struthers, who's a neurobiologist. And he talks of exactly what happens within the brain as we keep moving more and more and more towards porn. But basically, our brain has got its own self-reward system that begins to break down and even begins to atrophy due to excessive use. So the dose has to be increased. And what happens is we have frontal lobes in our brains that are responsible for discernment. And they tell us that these start to shrink. That's what's going on within our brains. So we end up a little bit like rats in the research laboratory that go and press the bar to get their next dopamine fix, you know. But what we don't realize is unknowingly changing the plasticity of our brain maps. That's what's happening. If it's happening to everybody, then we all say, well, that must be normal. But actually, slowly but surely, it is affecting us as humanity. Now, that biochemical mechanism is something that it was created to kick in during sex. And it's there to release what's called a binding hormone, which is called oxytocin. And the reason why oxytocin, the purpose behind oxytocin, is it is meant to deliberately try and bond the primary life relationship of a couple together, to commit a man to his wife so that they will end up actually being committed to their child and stay committed to their family, and therefore will be able to provide a place, a safe place of provision and protection for the next generation so that humanity can continue in that way. So basically, masturbating porn consumers find themselves bonding with that which is anonymous, not with the person themselves. Or we find ourselves bonding with just online partners. And what happens is interests in real love and real deep connection, particularly for married men and women or those in committed relationships, their interest in their partner begins to wane. And that also happens for children. I literally say my work has been dealing with the clearing up of people who've been stuck in the midst of a lot of this stuff. What are some of the signs of addiction if you're not sure they're already? The inability to quit voluntarily. Getting rid of this stuff, no more. 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks later, you're back on it. In some cases, even hours later. A declining effect of usual sexual activity. In other words, normal stuff doesn't do it anymore. You're constantly looking for stronger stimuli all the time just to try and get aroused. A constant preoccupation with sexual thoughts, images, and desires. Isn't that the whole male race? Anyway, to a certain extent, that is true. But it really is, this isn't just like, oh, she's really pretty. It's this whole thing of where suddenly we are beginning to literally undress anybody and everybody around us. And we're seeing them from an objective, not from a subjective point of view. We have withdrawal systems when we try and quit. We become angry, arrogant, irritable, all those things. We're not nice to be around. We know we're not nice to be around. That's what begins to happen. We find that we're actually wasting more time. I talked about my whole week of trying to find my porn fix, and trying to come alive, and I felt so empty at the end of it. But I've seen where this begins to affect people's jobs professionally, their family obligations are neglected, even their leisure time begins to be affected as well. And of course, for students, your study starts to be affected. You know, it's costing you to be here, it's costing you to do things, but you're thinking, I find it really hard just to sometimes engage in my study. Anyway, the behaviour then continues, even if the addict can't see destruction. So we end up on a slippery slope from some very, perhaps more abnormal, we go from slippery slope into more abnormal sexual practices. And then before you know, we have to up the dose. And before you know, we have a loss of moral inhibition. So if we're not careful, the substance of the actual addiction itself is the fact that we breach a taboo. You still with me? Still breathing? You're doing, guys are doing great. Is it dangerous and is it degrading? That was one of the questions I was asked to ask. But let me put some of these effects to you. I think you know this. And I'm going to talk about the way out very quickly before I shut up. Some of the consequences I've seen these in all sorts of people. Porn basically violates their dignity as a human person. It causes harm at physical levels because of what people end up doing with their bodies. On a spiritual level, people become empty deep inside themselves. And on a social level, people find it harder just to be in normal relationships with people. People close to them, people distant from them. And there's some incredible abuse when you end up getting involved in these chat lines and places whereby you then act out what you've seen. I picked up many, many people the following day when they'd just been desperately used the night before. It changes our attitudes towards sexuality as a whole. Men stop respecting women. And in some cases, women start drawing men in from an emotional level and they spit them out as well. It works both ways. What happens is we lose respect for each other. But men certainly end up being more forceful towards women. And women's dignity is lessened. Deviancy transitions towards becoming normal to the point whereby men begin to take on the rape myth. Well, she really did want it. She was asking for it. That's what she was asking for. No, she wasn't. She just looked really beautiful and feminine in what she was wearing, and she was off somewhere. She was not asking to rape her. But that begins to happen. And the desire for permanent relationships, to be settled, to have children, that begins to wane as well. So, yes, it clearly affects marriage and the family. What does it do to children? Because these are often the silent victims, if you like, in the whole porn debate. Well, we start looking at what sexuality is about now, for me, for my life. It's about a satisfaction of my desires. And so sometimes, as parents can lose sight of the fact that their children have needs too, and they need to be able to be present deeply to their children. It helps children in some way or other to have a degrading understanding of what women are about or what men are about. You know, I was a bit freaked recently when my seven-year-old said, you know, my seven-year-old daughter said to me, I think I look really big in this skirt. I said, darling, you don't look big at all. I say to myself, where did she get that image as a seven-year-old? She looks big. She's this beautiful, svelte little thing. She really is. But early porn exposure to children today, and it's happening in a subliminal way today, in a way in which those black and white images I saw as a child, some of that stuff is just all around us now. And yet that threw me into a deeply addictive lifestyle and had a serious effect on my own soul and my own personhood. But what happens is we have a greater possibility of addiction. kids end up engaging in sexual practices much earlier and are exposed to all sorts of sexually transmitted diseases. And we're learning today that sexually transmitted diseases don't stay static. They too begin to sort of grow and to change. The UK is beginning to hit a little bit of a crisis with something called supergonorrhea. And the doctors are saying that they don't have the antibiotics anymore to be able to heal this stuff. And it's ruining people's fertility and the rest of it. What I'm trying to say is everything seems so static, but it's not. It's changing all the time. And we have to be very, very aware of that. There was a very large study done on porn in about porn addiction with young people in 2007. So that's even nearly 10 years ago in the Baltics. And their results were that 10.5% of boys see porn daily. 29% see porn more than once a week. The number at that time was only 1.7% in girls. This is 2007. I was running programs 3 years ago where we didn't have enough female leaders to help deal with the women coming forward who are struggling with pornography. So much has the climate change. The big difference between daily and occasional users is that heavy users are 3 to 6 times more likely to have sex with animals, with children, and to actually engage in some form of sexual violence. I think I've given you enough of the bad news. Let me tell you about the way out. If we don't listen to our consciences on this topic, then please let's start listening to people's suffering. That could be your own suffering you may need to listen to today. Don't suffer anymore in this. Don't suffer in your secrecy and in your silence. I want to say this, behind your addiction, behind every addiction, is a longing for something essential to life. In other words, when you're drawn towards porn, you're being drawn towards something that ultimately is something good from within you that desires to be satisfied. But the porn can't satisfy it. That's why we don't try and get rid of all the desires that they're like, I hate it, I don't want to be sexual anymore. Being sexual is wonderful, it's an important thing to be in touch with your sexualness, your sexuality, etc. But the important thing is not to push that away, but to begin to be able to step aside from it, where possible, with others who understand the journey, and to begin to reflect on what it's really about. Because porn is basically the searching of a legitimate need in an illegitimate way. But there's no condemnation. No condemnation on you or anybody else for looking at porn. We're basically trying to discover and fulfill a true longing. But the porn addict has got to be able to turn around and accept this and renounce that immediate personal gratification. We have to engage our personal will and take up a battle for our own freedom. We have to do whatever it takes to win. Finally, 9 little points about ways forward. We have to make some radical steps, which means having a protection plan. We may need to have a confessor and some accountability guys. We've got to choose to step out of secrecy into the light, step out of darkness into light. I found scripture was wonderful for this for me. I found, having been raised anti-Catholic and become a Catholic, I found iconography, images of saints, beautiful holy images, helped me. I was made to be drawn towards those images. I realized I was made to be drawn towards the image of this man naked on the cross. That there, I found the doorway into some freedom for my life. I also realized that by sitting in front of something called the Blessed Sacrament, if you're Catholic, you'll understand that. If you're not, ask a Catholic, what is the Blessed Sacrament? But sitting there in the presence of Jesus Christ, that began to change the way I saw myself, and it began to cleanse my imagination as well. I had to learn emotional warfare. In other words, I had to see the signals before they happened. Let's put it this way. I found guys who on a Monday they'd meet and say, oh, watched 3 hardcore DVDs over the weekend, went to a prostitute Saturday night, masturbated myself stupid, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, what was going on for you on Wednesday? Oh, I had a day at work on Wednesday. You know? What happened to you on Thursday? Oh, it got even worse on Thursday. It was a real day on Thursday. Forget the language, this is what they'd say. I said, what happened on Friday? It got even worse. I said, when did you go and get the DVDs Friday night? I said, okay. You had a bad day Wednesday, got even worse Thursday. You felt like, just got to find something that makes me feel alive by Friday. So he goes off and he spends 50, 80 bucks on 3 DVDs. And then he wants to act out what he's seen, so he goes and has a prostitute. Then by Monday he walks in and he's like this. I feel empty. If he dealt with his feelings on the Wednesday, he wouldn't necessarily have to take his rubbish into Thursday or take his further rubbish into Friday. That sent him on a massive downward spiral. So we learned as brothers and in some cases sisters, to walk alongside each other and to engage every day in accountability to find out what was happening in our lives. We learned to be able to be seriously honest about what's going on in our hearts. We found places where we could say, I've had a really, really bad day. Talk to me about it. Let's talk about this. Let's deal with this. Rather than ending up spiraling into a place where you spend hundreds of bucks in a place where you feel quite degraded. We had to connect with a source of unconditional love. Unconditional. Where there's lots of mercy and lots of opportunities to keep falling flat on your face. The program I ran was called Falling Forward. I'd say, welcome, you're going to fall a lot of times, and you're really welcome here. But you can either fall backwards and say, I give in, or you can fall forwards and say, I am not giving in. I'm going to keep walking forwards in this stuff. And I want to encourage all of you who struggle with this to do that, or if you've got a friend who's stuck in the porn, keep walking forward whenever they're falling forward with them. The other thing is this, is don't give up once you fall. Don't give up. Just keep rising back up and saying, I will not let this become the idol that runs my life. And the other side of it, I'd say, is we've got to really choose our support very carefully. And we've got to choose our mates very carefully. And I'd say this to you as guys. If you think that the person to talk to is your girlfriend or to talk to a woman, many women find this topic very, very difficult. I suggest to you that first and foremost, you talk to your mates about this before you talk to women. And the same is true for you as ladies. Clearly, if you've got a problem, there are a lot of women out there who are struggling in this area. And I know there's many compassionate, loving, understanding, non-condemnatory women out there who want to help you walk this journey. And the challenge, of course, is to the church. Church has got to be able to create places of accountability.
It's just got to.
And we've got to work against porn. You can't just say, I'm not going to look at it and leave it like that. You're either working for it or you're working against it. God bless David Cameron. One good decision he made was to make sure that there's a filter on all pornography in the UK. You have to opt in to look at pornography in the UK. Here, I could show you anything and anything on my phone right now. You can't do that in the UK. And somewhere or other, if we're not careful, we begin to cripple ourselves as a society as a whole. So, we fought against tobacco. The challenge for us today is, will we just keep delighting in porn and head on a very dangerous journey? Or will we face the dangers of porn and come to a place where afresh we can delight in ourselves? I think at that, I'm going to shut up for once. Thank you.
That was James Parker with Pornography and Its Dangers. For more from the Sydney University Catholic Society's Life Week, and for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.